Called an outpost of tyranny and Europe's last dictatorship by the US government, Belarus has for more than a decade been under the rule of President Alexander Lukashenko. He's been intolerant of criticism and public displays of dissent. In the run-up to presidential elections last year, more than a dozen opposition figures were imprisoned. Information is tightly controlled, and as Jonathan Fryer has been finding out, the saying, knowledge is power, could have been coined with Belarus in mind.
The weatherman on CNN had a glint in his eye as clouds swirled across the computer graphics behind him, and he declared, "Well, it looks as though summer has ended in Northern Europe." I could have told him that just by looking out of my window in Minsk. Only a few days previously, the temperature had been 35 degrees Celsius, but now it had tumbled to the mid-teens and rain was lashing the streets below. Undeterred, my friend Sergei, not his real name, turned up in a smart, shiny suit, bearing a beautifully wrapped bouquet of flowers. Not for me, I hasten to add, but for the teacher at the primary school where his little boy was going to have his first day. "It's Knowledge Day," Sergei exclaimed. "This is what we do at this time of the year, and everyone is very happy." Knowledge is something Belarusians treasure. There are highly educated people and avid readers, but their access to information is circumscribed. TV and radio are both totally controlled by the government of Alexander Lukashenko. Most newspapers also toe the line. The few independent ones, constantly at risk of being shut down, have tiny circulations and are not usually available at news kiosks. Nor are foreign newspapers, with a few Russian exceptions such as Izvestia. Foreign journalists often denied visas to enter Belarus. Tellingly, it's the only European state that isn't a member of the Council of Europe, which monitors human rights, amongst other things. Belarus is also under sanctions from the EU and some other Western countries. This is because elections last year, which prolonged President Lukashenko's rule, were declared to be rigged. Another friend of mine, Yuri Kashkavatsky, made a remarkable film called The Square, about the election period. It focused on the camp of pro-democracy campaigners who set up tents in freezing conditions in Minsk's October Square, until they were evicted by the security forces and many were taken off to prison. The film was never shown in cinemas in Belarus, of course, but 100,000 copies circulated in the form of underground Samizdat CDs. News also travels by word of mouth or through mobile phones. The internet, though expensive, is very popular. So both sides in the government-opposition divide use technology to their advantage. I'd been warned that my hotel was bugged and advised to avoid using landline phones. Meetings with opposition activists and independent journalists were carried out in noisy cafes or restaurants, or, in one case, in a park. Belarus is very reminiscent of the old Soviet Union in that way, though today even the Communist Party faces harassment. Minsk is where what became the Soviet Communist Party held its first convention. There's a Lenin Square and a Karl Marx Avenue, and a bust of the founder of the Soviet Intelligence Service, Felix Dzerzhinsky, is still located opposite the huge KGB building. The security services are constantly monitoring the population. In advance of planned demonstrations, known activists are often rounded up and sent to prison for a few days on trumped-up charges of swearing in public or urinating in the street. My friend Sergei, at the young age of 27, has already been in jail 4 times. The other day, he took me to see the regime's pride and joy, the National Library. It's the tallest building in Belarus on the road out to the international airport. It's certainly a remarkable structure, distinctly resembling a spaceship that's landed in the middle of a barren plain. At night, the facade is lit up with dancing coloured lights, and the local drunks sit on benches nearby to enjoy the display. Although one is meant to give the authorities 1 month's notice before going on a tour of the library, Sergei managed to wangle me in. On each floor there are wide circular corridors lined with contemporary Belarusian art. Our lady guide walked backwards with gymnastic dexterity, pointing everything out. As she explained, that's the reading room for people with secondary school certificates, and that's the room for people with a university education, and that's the room for university professors. A girl whom Sergei had brought along pointed to a big wooden door and whispered, "And that's the president's private suite, where he can read anything he wants in comfort." She knew this despite the fact that it was her first time in the building. Like many Belarusians, she's aware that the library is constructed on marshy land, and she fears that one day it will simply sink into the ground. "Like Lukashenko's regime," Sergei added with glee.
Jonathan Fryer.